our core strength as Canadians is our people, and leveraging our multicultural talent pool towards these tariff discussions, global trade discussions. It's the people that are going to close those deals and that have those relationships that are going to bring us towards a common goal.
Welcome to Cross Pollination. This week, we meet Murales Sriarayanathas, a global serial entrepreneur, author, and cross-pollinator based in Toronto. He chats about the many business ventures he's been involved in Canada and abroad, including Computech College, 3 Magazine, and 369 Global. Murales tells us why Canada and our many global diasporas are an advantage, if not a key, to doing business globally, and how our approach to a society that has room for many different kinds of people can serve us now and into the future.
Yeah, I was born in the UK, 0 to 7 in the UK, and then 7 to 21 in Winnipeg, Manitoba, in Canada. And then from 21 to about 35, I worked predominantly in South Asia, India, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Malaysia, and a couple of years in Europe from 2010 to 2012. And then back to Toronto. So, from my very young years, the definition of a third culture kid is someone who has grown up in a culture that's different from the culture of their parents. I mean, that was the start. That definition was created in the 70s. So things have obviously changed with the internet and globalizations, et cetera. But even from a young age, I had so many different cultural experiences, but also doing business is a different lens to things. And being a TCK, trying to figure out how to manage through these different cultures. And I think as I grew up, learning how to really embrace the diversity that that I have as no, I think when you're young, you kind of think of it as a, I wish I could fit in. And then when you get older, you're like, well, I guess nothing's going to change. I might as well embrace this thing almost. But you become really proud of who you are. And I think that's really helped me in the work that I do now.
As he mentioned, Murales is a third culture kid, someone who grew up in a different country and culture than their parents did. It's a concept that I and many others around the world know well from our own experiences. There are increasing numbers of TCKs across the globe, and they come in all kinds of different forms. Third cultures and the third culture advantage are themes that run through his work.
The work that we do, I'm really happy that it's resonating for folks. And I'm sure we're going to get into this, but our parent company, 369 Global, of which I'm a co-founder, our mission is educate, inform, and activate global thinkers. And, of course, TCKs are global thinkers, being able to manage these different cultures. But that activate global thinkers is such a key part of our mission because, as you just said, there are many people going through this. It's getting even more complicated in many different cultures, but it is really important, I think, for these voices to be heard, for us to provide spaces where we can, and really for people to really participate in the discussion, participate in the solutions for the challenges that we have globally.
I asked Murales, what are some of the common themes that have crossed through his cross-pollinating and global career?
I mean, I was very, very lucky. I left Canada when I was 20. And even as a young kid, I did so many, fun things like paper routes, hauling garbage, working in kitchens as dishwasher and server and all of that stuff. When I got to work in Asia, there were so many different industries and I really got to cut my teeth into entrepreneurship there. And there's a lower cost of entry into those places, but really informed my entrepreneurial journey. And, things like, for example, the telecom industry, I owned a telecommunications company called Prio Communications in the UK. We were in the real estate space in Bangladesh.
spice distribution. We manufactured cosmetics, bicycles, all kinds of things in South Asia. And so now when I came back to Canada, one of my first acquisitions was Computech College. And I bought that in 2014, and now it's my 11th year running it. But the college was established in 1991, so it's 30-plus years old. But really was a great vehicle for me to really support and connect with these individuals that I saw firsthand in many different countries with these tremendous professional careers. And then coming to, you know, a place like Canada and kind of struggling to find that right equal, if not better opportunity in terms of their profession. But also I thought that was also a missed opportunity for Canada and Canadian institutions, that here was this global talent pool that, we weren't able to connect with in Canada. So Computech College was a great opportunity to connect the two. That then expanded into, we have a magazine called Three Magazine, which we launched in September of 2024. And Three Magazine, the name Three comes from the term third culture kids. And really Three Magazine focuses on not only, you know, newcomers and professionals to Canada, but also professionals, global professionals from Canada or what have you that are working in, you know, kind of global nomad kind of roles. You know, if you think about places, folks from Deloitte or PwC that are working globally, Tata Consulting Services. I mean, many of our organizations are these multinational corporations, but these are professionals that have interesting stories, interesting experiences, and we wanted a platform that, like the magazine, that shared that.
You mentioned TCKs being global thinkers. What's the focus of Three Magazine?
Yeah, you know, our focus has really been, I think there's a massive opportunity, as you identified these global travelers are increasing. I shouldn't say travelers, global, you know, movers and shakers are definitely increasing. I mean, we see a shift in education in terms of micro learning, you know, of course, in the education space for some time, but I also see this in terms of micro work as well. You know, now we're podcasters on a Monday, and you know, maybe project managers on other days, yoga instructors, you know, life coaches, etc. And I think the work that we do ties into that because it's people that are you know, doing a project in Costa Rica or working from Costa Rica, doing something in Canada. And so how do we as a group position ourselves in terms of education, really supporting the training and upskilling that's needed to leverage these roles? And also in the information side, in terms of the magazine, connecting with people and ensuring that their stories are told, you know, the successful ones, but also the challenges. And because I think that's going to inspire the products and services that they're working on and or the next generation that is going to do something similar to them.
As we've heard, Mirali's been involved in a wide variety of different kinds of global ventures. In addition to international themes, are there other common threads to his work? What makes a venture interesting to him?
This is a very like personal reflective question, so I appreciate it. But I you know, I think I've really had to in the last few years dig deeper on this, because I think as a young person, I was very excited by entrepreneurship and, you know, thinking about growing business, etc. And I think, you know, especially when I had children, when you know, the elder generation started getting, you know, sicker and, you know, some people sadly passed, there's a different kind of perspective that you have. You know, people say you live two lives. You live your first life, and then your second life begins when you truly know that you're going to die. And I think at this age, you know, I'm turning 46 this year. There's a lot of both. I see a lot of good, you know, friends having new babies and kids, and I have kids of my own. And then, you know, my parents or uncles and aunts and family members that, you know, are closer to the end of their years. And I think that really helps you focus on what is purpose. And for me, it has really been recognizing how much people have helped me throughout the years, whether it was, you know, individuals that lent a helping hand, that guided me, that supported me, gave me great advice, or institutions. You know, my family in Winnipeg lived in affordable housing, so I was very grateful that that was an opportunity. I'm sure my parents were much more grateful than I, since I was a kid, but, you know, very grateful that Canada provided that kind of support for us. I went to one of the best private schools, arguably, I would say, in Canada, but definitely in Winnipeg, all boys Jesuit school. And my parents couldn't afford that, but someone there, you know, donated to the bursary program. And so I was able to have my tuition covered. And so I think institutions and organizations like this are critical. And so my focus has always been on how do I serve? I love to serve. I think leadership is service. And how can I give back to all of these different people that have supported me? I don't think it's always directly giving back to them, but rather how can I continue that kind of service to others and support these institutions? I think a prime example is healthcare in Canada. You know, we are very blessed with a universal healthcare system, but there are still, supports that these hospitals need in terms of medical equipment, et cetera, and also support for staff. And, you know, it was nice during the pandemic, we were like banging on pots and pans for these frontline staff that helped us through the pandemic. But we need to continue that support for these important institutions in our country and in our world. So going back to your question of where is my focus on this? It is really, you know, this focus of service, giving back to our community. I love business. I love making money, but I don't believe my business will grow without the support of community. And I think the real value is not just the money that you make, but the impact that you have with on the people around you.
I asked Mirelle, in light of some of the recent challenges related to immigration, like the rising cost of living that's increased dramatically in a lot of Canadian cities and in other places around the world, it's worth noting, does he still think Canada is a good place for people to come to establish new lives?
In a nutshell, yes. You know, I've been very fortunate to live in many different countries. I've chose to raise my family. I have a 8-year-old daughter, Sophia, a 6-year-old son, Leonardo. And I think this is an absolutely amazing place. Canada is an amazing place to raise my kids here and to be a base and a foundation for global business. And, you know, you touched on the global diaspora in Canada. I think that's the key for me. You know, Canada, with its multicultural government policy, but also multicultural society, is a micro example of what the world is going to be like in the future. And for us to you know, work and not only survive but thrive as a nation on a global scale, I think you know, speaks to the opportunities of the future. And those people that are living in this ecosystem today are going to have the advantages of how do you connect with different people around the world with these, you know, as we talked about earlier, there are more people with this TCK multicultural kind of upbringing. And so folks that grow up in Canada are going to be used to that. I mean, you see the kinds of foods that we have in restaurants as an example. There's like Korean, Jamaican cuisine and Peruvian, Japanese cuisine. Because it's young people that grew up in these multicultures. So, you know, taking that example of food and then transferring that to business or other opportunities, and also addressing, coming up with solutions to these global challenges that we have. You need global thinkers, and Canada is a nurturer of global thinking. So I am quite bullish, absolutely, and I think. You know, I think business leaders in Canada have an opportunity to really double down on that. I think there's a lot of challenging conversations that are happening in different parts of the world. And I think it's a huge opportunity for Canada to rise up and show some leadership.
What do you think some of those opportunities are, especially right now? We're kind of at a crossroads. There's lots of new ideas bubbling up.
And lots of scenarios being debated as to what the near future could look like politically and economically in terms of trade, where we can do business, and with who.
You know, this, if you look at most of the global organizations, many of them are led by Canadians and people in you know, whether it's for-profit or non-profit global organizations, they recognize Canadians as key leaders because they have this amazing capacity of respecting and recognizing different perspectives and bringing everyone to towards a common goal. There's a book called Mutual Accommodation that talks about this and references mutual accommodation as a skill that is really developed by Canadians who grow up in Canada. You know, you're surrounded by many different cultures, and I think some people struggle in terms of trying to figure out how to get different perspectives together. But, you know, Canadians do this because that's almost our daily lives, at least, you know, definitely in the big cities that we have. So I think leaders, leaders have an opportunity to double down on that as Canadians. And yes, as other nations are pushing towards nationalistic kind of tendencies, I think there is something to be said about that for Canada as well. I'm very excited on how Canada's, getting this resurgence of patriotism. I think we've always had that, but speaking up about it a little bit more, I think is not common for Canadians. So I'm very happy to see that. But I think it's upon our political leaders to remind Canadians that our core strength as Canadians is our people and our multicultural people, and leveraging our multicultural talent pool towards these, tariff discussions, global trade discussions. It's the people that are going to close those deals and, that have those relationships that are going to bring us towards a common goal. So I think there is a huge opportunity because other nations are trying to figure this out still. But Canada's always already figured it out. We just need the right leader to lead us there.
Following up on those opportunities, so this is a question I'll be asking a lot of our guests with international business experience over the coming year, is for companies who want to start branching out globally, how do they get started? What do they do?
The key is to tap into our multicultural talent pool. You know, we are registered in Kenya. One of the ways that happened is because we have Kenyan Canadians working within our group. And it was leveraging their networks in Kenya, having them help guide our strategy and policy on our market entry into Kenya. You know, I give the example of if I want to sell a product to the Filipino community, okay, great. I can have a salesperson that's from the Filipino community. Wonderful. But I also want someone from the Filipino community that is helping create the product and services that I'm going to deliver there. And I think that's what many companies forget to do. You want people that have a say, at the leadership level, have an opportunity to create the product and service that you're going to deliver in this new market that you're entering. So that's one aspect of going global. I think the thing I think that also needs to be considered when you're looking at your current staff. You have most of us have a very global workforce, and gone are the days of, you know, this homogenous kind of thinking in the workplace, which can be challenging. It's easier, you know, the African proverb is, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go as a group. And sometimes that's very challenging when you have many other folks to consider in terms of different perspectives. But if you really want to build a long-lasting business, that's what it's going to take. And the recognition of that will help guide you on what you need to do in terms of your global workforce locally and opportunities that you're considering in terms of global expansion.
In these changing times, amid discussions about shifting global trade opportunities, Morale is among a number of people who've written about Canada and connecting with BRICS. In his case, in an article on his blog that we'll link to in the show notes. BRICS is the group of countries that includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, the early members, as well as five more member countries and a number of other applicant countries. BRICS countries now include around half the world's population and almost 40% of its economy by GDP based on purchasing power parity. BRICS isn't necessarily about trade relationships or agreements with the whole group multilaterally. They could be bilateral between specific member countries. So what does Morale think about Canada and BRICS?
I think there's huge opportunities and learnings for us as Canadians. There are always going to be political challenges and geopolitical challenges. Again, I think Canadians show leadership and have shown leadership in the past and continue to do so. And I think there's opportunities for growth there. But Canada as a nation, in my view, has not always, but for the most part, has, I think, shown tremendous leadership as a global nation. In regards to how it's acted on the global scale. And I think that's why, you know, it's always been a safe nation. That's why people continue to be excited to come to Canada. But on the trade side, I think we have a lot more that we can do. Obviously, you know, now we're focused on these tariffs and trade discussions with our good friend and neighbor, the United States. And huge amounts of money have been invested, and there's huge amounts of trade that's going on with the U.S. And I think, you know, if you look at the long term, I think they are a strong partner for us, and I think they will continue to be a strong partner for us. And I think it's healthy to always have, you know, negotiations and discussions. You know, political leaders come and go, but these kinds of business relationships have been lasting for decades, and I'm sure they will continue to. But it's going to take individuals to have those discussions. But going to continue to build on those discussions and those trades. But going back to your question on BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa. And I guess maybe I'll have to be careful because you have some South African connection there. But I think there's huge opportunities because, I mean, just like yourself, there's people who have connections to these countries, BRICS nations. And how do we leverage them as Canadians? Because I think, you know, you might not agree with all the things a nation is doing, but it's going to take someone that is understands Canadian values and Canadian way of life, and you know, South African values and way of life, and they might be different in a lot of aspects, but you know, that Canadian who, like South African Canadian, has the ability to connect the two nations and find common ground. Where do we connect? And I think that has tremendous value. So if you look at India, I think India as a nation has done an incredible job of being able to communicate with Russia, with the United States, with China. Like, it's talking to all of these nations, and somehow it looks so magical. They've been able to, you know, continue trade with all of these nations despite other countries having a lot of challenges, including Canada. Now we have a challenging conversation with China, with Russia, now with the United States. I mean, you know, that hasn't been, in my view, what Canada has done in the past. And I think there's an important mandate for leadership to get us back there. And, you know, India, we already do. Our potash goes to India, from Saskatchewan, uranium, Dal. I was so amazed by that. Dal, like pulses, goes to India from Saskatchewan, which I think is incredible. But it is like almost negligible the amount of trade that Canada does with India in comparison to other countries that India trades with. So there's huge amounts of opportunity there, and we have a massive Indian diaspora in Canada. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. We of course have a massive trade opportunity with our Chinese diaspora. Are there political challenges? Absolutely. I'm not, you know, naive or oblivious to those facts, but there are still opportunities for us to connect, and in a value-driven way. And I think Canadians are the ones to be able to do this.
Following up on doing business with BRICS, I asked Murali an atypically Canadian, slightly controversial question related to what often happens when this topic comes up in public. It makes some people, frankly, uncomfortable. If we're doing business and deepening connections with BRICS nations, which are mainly non-Western, often emerging countries, many of them in the global South, what does it say about who Canada is today? What does it mean for our identity, and what does it mean for historical ties that people are more traditionally accustomed to with regions like Europe or the Western members of the Commonwealth? Why shouldn't people be concerned about doing business more widely?
I think it is very challenging and uncomfortable if your view of Canada is Tim Hortons, hockey, you know, maple syrup. That's not my view of Canada. So I understand from someone's perspective how that can be challenging. I mean, if you look at the UK, you would think in the UK that the most popular cuisine is fish and chips, but the most popular cuisine is chicken tikka masala. And, you know, I think it was Donald Trump, who was saying in one of his speeches, like, now when you go to France, it's hard to even find a croissant because there are so many other cuisines there. This is happening globally. What is happening? Well, nations are becoming more multicultural. It is inevitable because the large populations are coming from predominantly the global South. So, you know, this notion of TCKs, as, you know, we started at the beginning of the call, is becoming more complicated. There's many more different cultures, and things are changing. And, you know, look at, let me give a little bit lighter example. If you look at Netflix, Netflix has a whole bunch of content on there that isn't only English speaking content. It is many different cultures, many different languages, many different, you know, TV shows, et cetera, because we are all becoming much global. I mean, we are past the point of just staying in one culture. We are a global village. And despite the fact that many nations are trying to get back to these kinds of things, I personally believe we're past that point. We have the internet. We have these global institutions, these global ways of communicating and trading. And I think we should be focused on how do we live now as a multicultural society. And that's why I'm bullish on Canada, because Canada has done this. Has it done it perfectly? No, but it has done it for decades. And I think, again, we have the ability to show leadership. Multiculturalism is not First Nations community. Multiculturalism is not, you know, French-speaking Canada. It's not, you know, the Indian diaspora. It's all of us. It's all of us. So when we focus on multiculturalism, French Canada shouldn't be afraid, because they are part of that multicultural mosaic. English Canada shouldn't be afraid. They're part of that multicultural mosaic. You know, Ukrainian Canadians shouldn't be afraid. Ethiopian Canadians shouldn't be afraid. We are all a part of it. And if we focus on that, I think, you know, we will be a strong nation, but we will also be a shining example to the world that don't worry about losing your croissants or your maple syrup. No, there is a way, there is a path forward where you can still keep that and still participate in the country that you're living in. How do you know that? Well, look at Canada. That I think is going to take leadership. We need leaders who recognize that, embrace that, but recognize that as a strength of Canada.
Morales also written a book, Between Borders, Beyond Boundaries, Strategies for Authentic Business Engagement in an Interconnected World, which you can find online, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes. In the book, he talks not only about his own story and experiences and his thoughts on tapping into Canada's global diaspora, but also about a method he uses, EIA, Embed, Interpret, Act, in making global connections.
So the book is called Between Borders, Beyond Boundaries, and it was published with Forbes. We released it in December of 2024. And it is a unbelievable dream that I have this. This is my first book, and I never thought that I would write a book, but first of all, even had a story that you know, folks would be interested in. I mean, it remains to be seen how the book sales will go. So I shouldn't be that you know, perhaps making that statement, but I'm excited that, you know, Forbes saw something in my journey, and at least enough to help in terms of the publishing. But the book is really about, you know, with Forbes, you know, they definitely have this business angle. And what I wanted to really share was how, as a third culture kid, I did businesses in different parts of the world. Which may not be, you know, that unique, but I think the journey that I went through learning, you know, I spoke about this before, at the start rather, you know, kind of focused on trying to fit in, but then realizing that, you know what, my uniqueness was my superpower. And when I tapped into that and then, you know, brought that to business and business strategy, it was the game changer. And so in the book, I talk about, yes, a bit of my personal journey, but also these business strategies that I use to do different business in different parts of the world. And I talk about, you know, business that I was involved in Asia,
In the UK, I talk about Prio Communications, and then the journey of Computech from when I bought it in 2014 to 2024. And we grew, last year in 2024, we were recognized in the Globe and Mail as one of the fastest growing companies in Canada. And that was despite, not going into this international student space, but really focus on supporting newcomers that were permanent residents or new Canadian citizens and adult learners. So that was, the book kind of ends on that and touches on Three Magazine and our hopes of what was going to happen with the magazine. And so maybe the next book will be about, 1 year later, who knows, but it's, I think an interesting story, I hope, to folks. But I also, put in a method that I kind of used as a framework that I hope people, can use as a tool for them as they think about, not only expanding their business globally, but as many business owners find, they have a very much a global diverse workforce and how to really connect with this this team. And so I talk about this method called the EIA method. E standing for embed, I for interpret, and A for act. And the embed, interpret, act method is on the embed side, it's about going into a new culture, a new space, a new country with very much an open mind. Buddhist monks will talk about you can't learn something with your cup full. And so you really need to empty your cup, be open-minded without judgment, and really be an observer of what is happening around you. And I talk about, I left Winnipeg right after my undergrad. I was about 21 years old. And then my first stop was Bangladesh. And I was in the middle of the village in Bangladesh trying to figure out how to sell these products. And I was very scared I didn't want to lose who I was as that, 21-year-old from Winnipeg. I didn't want to really open myself up to the Bangladeshi culture there. I mean, yes, of course, to a certain extent, but I was more closed off. And the moment, it wasn't a moment. It was a couple of years later of going through challenges and, there was a lot of crying nights there trying to figure out what I was doing and who I was. But the moment I started to open myself up and truly embed myself in the culture, meaning really appreciate the food, build relationships with friends, dance to the tunes there. I mean, I think dancing is a great example. You can dance and kind of sway to and fro, but when you open yourself up and you really feel that beat, you appreciate the music in a different way. And that's what I mean when I say embed. The second step is interpret. And interpret is absolutely critical, especially, for those of us who are coming into a situation with some tremendous experience. By no means am I talking about assimilation, like embedding yourself and just completely giving yourself to that culture. I mean, maybe that's someone's choice, but that's not what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is you're coming to it also with these incredible personal experiences. And when you embed yourself first, you embrace the culture that you're in, but when you interpret, you have gained some observations by embedding yourself, and then you bring your own personal interpretations. And by combining those two, you create a unique, the third step is act, you create this unique perspective. And it is that perspective that has helped me in business, and that's what I talk about in the book.
Rowley's put the EIA method and some other more unconventional ideas into practice at Computech College in Toronto, which he bought over 10 years ago.
For Computech College, one of the steps that we took, where everyone, when I first said this, thought I was crazy, even my own staff, is we made a decision that we didn't want to charge extra for international students. And, you know, our domestic student fees and international student fees are the same price and have been for years. And so in 2014, when I bought the college, you know, there was a lot of college owners that were doing these partnerships. We're a private college. They were doing partnerships with community colleges and universities to really tap into the international student student market. But many educational institutions in Canada charge 3 to 4 times the domestic rate. They charge 3 to 4 times for international students. And for me, I you know, ate the food they fed me of people, parents in, you know, the village of Bangladesh, India, Sri Lanka, of parents who would sell their land, you know, work their land, you know, work so hard to save up money for their, you know, young son, young daughter to come to Canada. And I thought, you know, how could I charge them more? Like it made no sense to me. And really it's because I had a direct experience with those parents. And meaning I didn't know directly their kids, but like just seeing that experience, right? And so I thought, I don't want to do that. And look, those colleges that did that made a huge amount of money. I mean, a lot of them in the hundreds of millions. We didn't do that. And people thought I was crazy. But then, you know, now 10 years later, when there's a lot of challenges in Canada, they've capped the amount of international students. And, you know, some institutions that highly depended on that have gone bankrupt or, you know, have not been able to sustain it. We continue to every year grow slow and steady and sustainably and in a values driven way. And I really appreciate that. And I think the students appreciate that because, you know, we don't do that much in terms of marketing. It is really, are we providing a good product and service to our students? And then they tell someone else. And so that's also, you know, the partners that we have. I talked about earlier engaging with community. We engage with, you know, mosques, temples, churches, gurdwaras, YMCA, Skills for Change, hospitals. These community organizations and institutions around our college that are critical. And so as a result, you know, each institution will send one or two students here in the year, and our graduates end up getting an employment opportunity there. So one is, you know, embedding myself in these different cultures when I worked overseas and understanding their journey, and being able to make a decision that I felt was respectful to their experience and the experience I had, but also using this EIA method in terms of how we do business at Computech, connecting with community or embedding ourselves with community organizations here. And I think that's helped us.
This is taking a really holistic and maybe even cross-pollinating approach to education. To give things a more concrete feel as to how they translate into the real world, I wanted to know what fields the Computech grads go into after their studies.
Oh, great question. So we do business healthcare technology. So on the business side, programs like supply chain management, business administration. On the healthcare side, we do the PSW program. For those who are not familiar, that's personal support worker. It's kind of like a nurse's aide, a nurse's assistant, medical office administrator. We have a social worker program on the healthcare side. And on the tech side, I mean, with a name like Computech, we're known for our technology. We have mobile app development, some software programs, but our biggest program is our cybersecurity one.
Our demographic is 35 to 45 is the age range. 75% of our student base are women, and they're all newcomers, permanent residents, newcomers. And, you know, I did some work with Professor Yunus in while I was in Bangladesh, who's absolutely incredible. For those who don't know, he won the Nobel Prize for microfinance. He's from Bangladesh and such an incredible person. And I was so fortunate to get some guidance from him. But one of the things that he shared when he did the microfinance is in the early days, he would give it to men and women. And he found that, you know, the men would, not all of them, but typically would go have fun in whatever they defined as fun. But the women would take that money and their earnings and ensure that their kids were fed, ensure that the kids went to school. And as a result, you know, investing in that woman was investing in the family, which translated to investing in the community. So what we see at Computech with the demographic that we serve is, you know, when we introduce things like cybersecurity and they're aware of what's happening, that also translates to, you know, their spouse, their partner, their kids. You know, as a result, we've done provincial programs where we've encouraged underrepresented youth into cybersecurity so they get a taste of it. But we also do holistic learning in regards to financial literacy in Canada, in regards to civic engagement in Canada, you know, recognizing that many of our students are coming from countries where, you know, going out to vote was a life or death situation. But now they're in Canada and they have the opportunity to vote, or they will have the opportunity soon. And helping them understand, you know, things as basic as, you know, the different levels of government and their responsibility, but also critically that they, as individuals, their voice is absolutely important. They need to speak up. They need to get involved. So they understand what's happening, but also that these political leaders understand what their concerns are and as now Canadians, what they would like to see political leaders and parties do.
And here's Morale's final word on the Canada that he sees that can make the most of our demographics and opportunities on the world stage.
You know, I'm in the space of education, specifically in newcomers. But I think it's absolutely ridiculous that in rural Ontario, for example, our three campuses are in Toronto. In rural Ontario, there are still places where they don't have adequate internet. And, you know, if you think about someone who is in a rural part of the country and you are talking about, you know, government is providing all of these incentives for newcomers, all of these incentives for, you know, tech innovation, et cetera, et cetera. You have completely left out this community, the rural community. What are the opportunities for them? How are they going to tap into, you know, the digital opportunities if you don't even give them internet, adequate internet? So I completely resonate with the anger and frustration that folks in that part of the country face. And that is why I believe the focus should be on multiculturalism and a recognition that they are part of that story. Does that mean, you know, we should stop funding for newcomers, et cetera? No, I don't think so. I don't think that should stop, but I think we need to not leave out other Canadians. We need to bring all of us together. And I think, you know, these exciting opportunities that we have in AI, these exciting opportunities we have in clean energy in Canada are ways that we can bring different citizens together towards a common goal.
That's it for this week's episode on TCK's International Ventures and Crossing Global Boundaries. Join us next episode for a chat with Lane the Auctionista, a cross-pollinator who's had many careers and invented a whole new job category of their own. If you enjoy this episode, please do share it with people you think might enjoy it too. We appreciate you listening. See you next time.